I like that. Well, what a difference a week makes. Last week at this time, I was sitting there thinking, whew. And this week, here I am. Hopefully everybody weathered the storm last week, and I see most everybody is here. So that's good. Every so often we need one of those to sort of bring us back to reality that, this is winter. I did move here, though, from Saskatchewan to get away from all that. I think that in Saskatchewan they should have a statute of limitations on shoveling, so that once you've done enough shoveling, you have the opportunity to move away and not have to worry about it too much anymore. We were going to have our Saturday life group last week, but since that obviously didn't happen, we will have it as originally scheduled today. And because we have the potluck downstairs, we'll probably meet up on one of the, probably that side over there, up on the balcony. So anyone who can join us for the Saturday Life Group, we certainly encourage you to come meet with us up on the top there. Really looking forward to this season's theme, Are You Ready for the Conversation? I had a chance to read through some of the material, and I think many of you will find it extremely helpful. So let me get right into this because, it's a big subject and I have one more page than I normally do. And I know with potluck everybody's anxious to get downstairs, so let me get through this as promptly as I can. We hear a lot of people use the term love all the time, right? It's become a catchword. We love it, right? I love it. I was watching a House Hunters International program, and this couple is looking at this house that they're looking to rent somewhere in the world, and she walks in and she says, well, I don't love it, and we know what that means, right? She doesn't care for it. But we use this word love a lot in all sorts of things, right? People say, oh, you still have a BlackBerry, and I say, I love my BlackBerry, you know? I do, in a weird way. We hear lots of sermons about love, what it means to love, what examples we can take from those messages. You know, as Debbie said, we can express our love by donating and impacting the lives of 500 people in Africa, a real expression of love. Our vision statement says, love God, love each other, love all. So we're impacted there in three ways with that word, love. But in all of this, I wonder if we have, to some degree, lost sense of what that word actually means. What does love actually really mean? And what does it mean for us? So my question today is, what do we mean when we say love? Years ago, the Beatles wrote a song, All You Need Is Love. And there's a line in that song that says, it's easy. Is it really? I came across an article out of Psychology Today magazine entitled, Is Love Really All You Need? Here's what it said in part. I won't read the whole thing. The author says, I realize that there may still be some many die-hard Beatle fans out there that still believe that love is easy and that it's all you need. From my experience, the author says, neither of those claims is true. It's not easy, and it's not necessarily all you need. He says it's easy to feel loving feelings towards someone, particularly when we find them physically attractive, fun to be with, funny, charming, sweet-smelling, and especially if they laugh at our jokes. But having a strong attraction towards or desire for another person isn't necessarily love. It is easy, though, to confuse the two. Love asks more of us than to simply feel a strong attraction to another person. And then he goes on to say this. It asks, love, or demands actually, that we put our own desires and preferences aside and replace them with a desire to serve the desires of our partner. Not always, but probably more than most of us would like to do. It requires us to be willing to be wrong and to resist the temptation to project blame on our beloved. It requires us to experience more lessons in humility than most of us would like to. It requires us to restrain ourselves when we feel the impulse to say or do something that would gratify our ego at the expense of our beloved's happiness. It requires us to constantly seek to discover what I can give to another rather than to live in the question of what's in it for me. And this, he says, is just for starters. When I read that, I thought, this word love, there's a lot more going on there than sometimes we give credit for it. You know, that one, it requires us to restrain ourselves when we feel the impulse to say or do something. I can't tell you how many times in the midst of a loud discussion you might want to, or I wanted to say something that would have ended very badly. And you have to not, you have to restrain yourself, you have to bite your tongue, and then you wake up the next morning so grateful because it wasn't important, you know? But I was fascinated, even Psychology Today recognizes that demonstrating real love is a challenge. Difficult. And I'm reminded of words I heard years and years ago. I like you because I love you, although. Right? I think that makes a whole lot of sense. That's helped me maneuver through life. You know, it's easy to like things that you agree with, that you enjoy, that you appreciate. Love comes in when it gets tough. Right? So my goal today is to take us from this, that sort of traditional syrupy love, to this. As Greg Williams said, love has a name. It's Jesus. I don't know how he knew I was going to use that slide, but there it is. So if you look up the definition of love, it says something about an intense feeling, blah, blah, blah. That's the way the definition of love starts in the dictionary. And I think that's a really, really inadequate definition of what love is really all about. Because what happens when you no longer feel that way? Does the love just go away? Is that how that works? What's in it for me? Nothing? I'm out of here. So an intense feeling is, I think, a really bad way to start off any understanding of what love is. But on top of that, that's not the kind of love that Jesus demonstrated for us. The Bible actually uses four Greek words. I thought there were three. There's four. Four Greek words to describe love. The first one, eros, romantic love. The second one, which I had never heard of, storge, the familial type of love. A third, philia, the brotherly love that unites believers. And, of course, agape, God's love for humankind. So four different words used to describe this idea of love. And I would suggest to you that any one of those four requires much, much more than just an intense feeling. There needs to be something more going on. It's not just about feeling something. That's not what love is. So what can we learn from Jesus' example? Well, the love that Jesus showed is a long ways away from that syrupy kind of love that we've come to recognize in, you know, various music, books, rom-com movies. That's Satan's influence. trying to devalue the currency of love. It's not godly love at all, the kind of love we see reflected back to us in modern culture. And too often, I fear that, you know, in church or Christians, we too, because we are in the culture, we sometimes get caught up in that false sense of what love is. I remember again, it was pointed out in a sermon many, many years ago that love is not just some fuzzy feeling, some warm and fuzzy thing that you feel inside of you. That's something else. Love is a verb. And if you know what a verb is, a noun is a thing, a verb is an action. Love is an action. It is something that we do. We have been called to love, right? That's why we look for opportunities to express that love. Giving a donation to help those 500 people, that was an expression of love. We did something. You express your love that way. We didn't just feel bad for them and then feel love for them. We do something. C.S. Lewis cautioned years ago, all it takes for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing. We have not been called to do nothing. We have been called to do something. So the question then is, how do we display this love? This kind of love in a way that means something in a world that is becoming very unchristian. How do we show real love, love that does something, in a world that places such a high value on being tolerant? Tolerance is perhaps the highest virtue that society teaches today. You know, love is not the greatest. Tolerance is the greatest thing. And there's a reason for that. Not love, but tolerance is what society wants everyone to show. And it's important to really understand what love is, because in this time, it's very hard to separate what I do with who I am. People are very much in a frame of thinking that what I do is who I am. Therefore, when we talk of loving acceptance, they think they need to be accepted completely. And that means approval and participation in the person's beliefs, behaviors, their lifestyle, their truth claims. You know, we talk about come as you are to church with the recognition that we are fallen. We are sinful. Come as you are means don't wait to be perfect. Come now. But since the Enlightenment thinkers of the 17th and 18th century, people like Rousseau, Locke, their thinking was that we're essentially good. And it's the environment that makes us do bad things. And all of that has crept into culture today so that we confuse what I am with what I do. So how do we love people with different beliefs and values and lifestyles? Do we just ignore all those things and stay quiet? Do we agree with them? Participate with them? You know, one of the media's big complaints about the past election in Canada against Andrew Scheer, every time I saw them on the news talking about Andrew Scheer, they pointed to the fact that one of his big downfalls was that he refused to march in a gay pride parade. This kept brought up over and over and over again. And the media pointed to that as being, you know, one of the things that he'll need to, I guess, pay recompense for. And in the end, he resigned. So that tolerance is very high in the minds of people today. But what does it mean to love if we just ignore those things? Paul commands us, he says, love as Jesus loved us. Says it in Ephesians there. Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children. And walk in the way of love. Walk in the way of love just as Jesus loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. You know, Jesus didn't ignore erroneous beliefs. Matthew 22:29, he says to the Pharisees, you're in error, because you know not the scriptures or the power of God. Jesus didn't always agree with behavior. He told women, the woman he caught in adultery, in John 8:10-11, Jesus straightened up, woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? No one, sir, she said. Well, then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. And he said the same thing to the fellow he the Bethesda gate. He said in John 5:14, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, see, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. And Jesus did not participate in things that he disagreed with. Hebrews 4:15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way just as we are, and yet he did not sin. And yet he loved us. He loved us. To understand that kind of love, we really need to be able to distinguish between what a person is and what a person does. What you do does not define you. The decisions you make in life do not define you. They are not you. But if we are more than that, what are we? Well, one, a human being is created in the image of God. Right? Max Lucado, the author, Christian author, tells the story that one of his most prized possessions is this football that he got that has 30 signatures on the football from NFL quarterbacks. It's a prized possession of his. But he says, it's not the football that's important. The football you can get at any dollar store. What's important, he says, are all those signatures on the football. And then he says it's the same thing with us. There's lots of species on this planet that have hair, that have skin, that have blood, that have a heart. What's important is there's only one that has a signature on their soul. And that it's the signature that's important. Human beings were created in the image of God. That's what's important. And two, each of us is a person for whom Christ died. Romans 5:8, it's not a slide, but God demonstrated his own love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While we were still sinners. So God showed his great love by sending his Son to redeem us, right? He died for us, and that is an example that we need to see people for who they are. Someone created in God's image, and someone for whom Christ died. What they do, what they believe, how they act, we need to look beyond that. They are someone that Christ died for. So when Jesus was asked, what was the most important commandment, right? In Matthew 22, he said this, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. But he didn't stop there. He went on in the next two verses, and he said, the second is like it. love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Love your neighbor as yourself. So how do we fully grasp what Jesus is telling us there? What does it mean to love your neighbor as yourself? Seems to me that that's a lot more than just having an intense feeling of appreciation for your neighbor. I came across this definition of what Christ-like love looks like. It says this: Christian love is making health, happiness, and spiritual growth of another person as important to you as your own. Love your neighbor as yourself. The things that we do for ourselves are the things that we should be looking to do for our neighbor. So let's unpack that a little bit, because Paul expands on that in Ephesians 5, where he's talking about husbands loving their wives. He says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. And he who loves his wife loves himself. So again, This is much more of love as a holistic approach. It's not just an intense good feeling that you get, not some chemical reaction going on. This is about doing something, being something, right? Real love, as Christ left his example, is a sacrificial love. It requires us to sacrifice. That you take a bullet for that person. You know, when I said that I love my BlackBerry, I would not take a bullet for my BlackBerry. I have a wallet that my daughter gave me at Christmas 2 years ago. Nice leather wallet. I needed a wallet. What I really like about the wallet is that it has an embossed Batman logo. I really like that. I use it all the time. It's here. Would I take a bullet for it? No, but I would take a bullet from my daughter. You know? I love her. I like the wallet a lot. I don't love the wallet. And we need to be able to separate that. We need to be able to cleave those two things, right? You like things, but you don't necessarily. Just because you like it a lot doesn't mean that you love it. It's one of those things that, you know, every so often when we watch the news and you see people who are involved in a mass shooting, there's always somebody who manages to put themselves between a victim and the shooter. I don't know that I would have the courage to do that to a stranger. And yet we are called to love our neighbor. Let's look at the phrase here, love your neighbor as yourself, in another aspect, in Ephesians 5:29. As for no one hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cares it, just as Christ does the church. I emphasize that word nourish, nourishes it, because that means to bring to maturity. That means to feed, both physically and spiritually, to care for, to contribute to the vitality and health, right? You were talking about the whole person here. Nourish it. No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it. And that is, by extension, how we should be loving those that we come in contact with. We should be helping them to grow, as it says in Luke, in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. To love as Christ means to love and provide for whatever it is they need to help their health, their spirituality, and their happiness. All those things. When we love our neighbor, we're interested in all those things. As Christians, we should not have a live and let live approach. Well, that's the way they are. That's not love. That's indifference. I was having this conversation a couple of weeks ago because it's one of those things that is always on my mind. Love is not the opposite of hate. Right? And that completely misstates what love is. If you look up in the dictionary what hate is, it says an intense dislike. It doesn't say an intense dislove. But we have confused like and love so much in society and the things that we've read and the things that we've seen and the things that we've heard that we think the opposite of love is hate. It's not. It's indifference. It doesn't matter to you. Right? You like things a lot or you hate things. But that's not love. To love someone is much, much deeper. Right? I like you because I love you, although it moves the relationship to something much, much more. It's not passive. We can't feel love for somebody and then not do something. To not take action is the very definition of indifference. So I hope that, you know, I'm able to convey just a little bit more of the depth of what love really is, because I know I've used that term poorly in the past. We've often heard that phrase, you hate the sin, but you love the sinner, right? Again, we learn to separate what somebody does from who they are. And I think that that is so important. Culture today gives us a very different picture of what love is. And it's easy to become confused by what Satan does in culture. Culture tells us that we're supposed to be tolerant and accepting of everybody. And that's because everybody's views have been elevated to the same status. Everybody's as equally right as everybody else. But that's not what Jesus taught. It's not what Scripture said. We are told to just accept and support them, but don't ask any questions. We're told to celebrate the decisions they make, but don't ask any questions. That's indifference. That's not love. Love doesn't ignore the harm that somebody does. Real love doesn't ignore the truth. You know, when Jesus went and met the Samaritan woman at the well, that was viewed as scandalous. The apostles just could not believe that he was doing this. And when he talked to the woman, he didn't ignore her lifestyle. He knew about the people, the husbands that she, the men that she was with. He didn't ignore that. He didn't say, I accept your alternate lifestyle. But he lovingly pointed out to her that this was not the way to live. And that it was ultimately bringing her unhappiness. He didn't ignore that. Today, Jesus' approach would be scandalous. He would be called intolerant. Right? The whole gospel is a scandal for that very reason, because it calls into question what we do. If you really love someone, do you turn a blind eye to their drug addiction? Do we, you know, if they're involved in a cult, do we just not say anything? Do we ignore destructive sexual behavior? If we really love someone, do we just say nothing? That's indifference. But here's another point. And I really, really, really need to stress this, because it's too easy to just be thinking one way. Love does not convey condemnation. Jesus didn't condemn the people that he talked to, nor should we. Far be it from us to condemn people. The woman caught in adultery, Jesus didn't condemn her. Same with the man at the Bethesda gate, didn't condemn him. He did tell them to change their behavior, change their lifestyle. And he did it in a loving way. That's what real love looks like. We need to look to practice that. Aggressively live in love, someone said, and humbly stand for truth. So we need to be loving in an aggressive manner. And when we bring that truth, we should be most humble about it. And do it out of a love for that person. Now, the consequences for us as Christians is that we have to be engaged, right? We have to intentionally engage with others to practice this love. We cannot practice this kind of love sitting at home in front of a TV monitor. So the question I need to ask myself, feel free to ask this of yourself, am I a friend of sinners? Jesus was a friend of sinners. Am I a friend of sinners? Now I know what you're saying. We're all sinners. This is true. But the spirit of this is people who are not here, your neighbor. Do I cut myself off from sinners? Jesus never, never cut himself off from sinners. And do I look beyond their sin, separating who they are from what they do? Jesus, you know, he looks beyond my sins. So, yes. Let me bring this to a close. I want to read a little bit from a book that I've had on my shelf since the late 90s. Josh McDowell, a Christian writer, wrote a book called The New Tolerance. And in there, he says this, tolerance says, you must agree with me. But love responds, I must do something harder. I will tell you the truth because I am convinced that the truth will set you free. Tolerance says, you must approve of what I do. Love responds, I must do something harder. I will love you even when your behavior offends me. Tolerance says, you must allow me to have my way. But love responds, I must do something harder. I will plead with you to follow the right way because I believe you are worth the risk. Love is far more important than tolerance could ever be. Look at these three things. Tolerance seeks to be inoffensive. Love takes risks. Tolerance is indifferent. Love is active. Tolerance costs nothing. Love costs everything. John 3:16-17. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. For God so loved the world. That's what love is. Much more than just an intense feeling. A feeling like, I'm happy. It's much more than that. Father, we thank you so much for bringing us here today. We thank you for all the things that you have provided, all the blessings that you have given, all the ways that you have been in our lives and directed them so that we can be here and participate as a group in praise to your mighty name. Help us to leave here with a better understanding of what love really is, what it does, what an impact it can have in our lives, and what impact we can then do others. Help us to put love into action in our lives. Help us to know and be recognizing the opportunities that come before us each and every day to show love to our neighbor, to love them as much as we love us, as much as you have loved us, in that you died for our sins. We thank you so much for this opportunity again to participate and sing praises to your mighty name. We ask a blessing on the food and the fellowship that will take place after, and we put it all in your merciful hands, Jesus. Praying together, amen.